This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Julian Ng. Real estate investment trusts, or REITs, are vehicles that invest in properties that provide stable rental income to pay dividends to their shareholders. Malaysia's REITs had a market capitalization of about 41 billion ringgit as of 30th of June. Now, the Securities Commission is proposing to allow REITs to raise their property development content and also buy vacant pieces of land, among other proposals. How will these proposals affect REIT investors, especially if you're buying REITs to have a dividend income? The SC is seeking comments for these proposals till 13th of September. On the grill today are Dato' Stuart LeBroy, Executive Chairman of Area Management, a real estate-focused private equity firm, and Azman Arifin, who is Chief Real Estate Consultant with Xstrata Solutions, a real estate consultancy. Gentlemen, you have extensive experience with REITs. What do you guys feel about these proposals? Perhaps we start with you.
Well, the Malaysian REIT Managers Association, of which I was chairman for 5 years, pioneered the discussions with the Securities Commission, I think nearly 3 or 4 years ago, to start bringing changes to the regulations, which will allow a little bit more leeway in terms of how the REITs can develop. I think the first thing that we asked for was actually REITs to be allowed to develop greenfield assets. Mm-hmm. Because we do get requests from clients that want to do new developments on long-term sale and leasebacks.
When you say clients, you don't mean the REIT investors, right? You mean
our tenants.
Your tenants.
Tenants. I'll give you an example, for instance. Like, you might have a client that is a big hypermarket operator, mm-hmm. that wants to open a new mall in another town. He may have identified the land, but is reluctant to invest the capital. He wants someone to build it so he can take a long-term lease. Now, such developments do actually give much higher yields if the REIT can actually do the development themselves, and you capture both the development profit as well as the yield. Those yields can run into double digits.
So if I can just give some detail to what is being proposed here, one of the proposals, raising development of the REIT from 15%, to 15% from 10% of the NAV of the REIT. Azman, is this going to make a lot of difference to the REIT? Because in the scheme of things, it's just 5 percentage points, right?
Yes, it's. Thank you very much, Julian, for having me here today. And Dato, good morning. Basically, I would imagine that the increase of 5% might not be so much of a concern. Basically, Singapore has a larger amount of 20%. 25%. Now, what we're looking at is basically how it's being done from now on. Now, this consultation paper has a lot of points where I think the Securities Commission is seeking to make the REIT market more exciting and attracting investors. And this is where I think whilst we are actually trying to excite the market, there's always this concern of how it's going to be done.
Okay, here's the conundrum, because I'm not sure if it is the duty of the regulator or, as you represent, Dato' LeBroy, the Malaysian REIT Managers Association, the MRMA, whose proposals now being incorporated into SC's suggestion, whether it is our duty to provide excitement to investors. For example, you don't say that we want to make the bond market more exciting, right? Because the bond has a certain kind of investors. Will this change as far as the interests of REIT investors are concerned? Will this change the risk profile of these REITs?
The reason it's actually capped at 15%, Julian, is really to minimize risk. There's always construction risk when you undertake projects like this. There's always a tenant risk. I believe the way forward would be that responsible managers who enter these kind of agreements have to make sure they have a pre-committed tenant before they go ahead with the development. I think speculative developments could be quite dangerous, especially in today's markets. So if you have a client that is willing to take a full lease on a property that wants a new office tower and take a 15-year lease, grade A, triple A tenant with a very strong covenant, I think that's a very good thing for the REIT to do. The big question here is, does the REIT have the construction experience? And that's where the risk comes in. Fortunately, many of the REITs that are in the market today are actually sponsored by developers themselves. So they can tap on their mother companies to actually help them with the development of these projects and have a clear path to delivery to the market. So that minimizes risk. I think the SC has taken this into consideration. I'll give you an example. When Sunway bought the Putra Mall and now have refurbished it extensively to a cost of nearly $500 million. It was not considered a development, but an enhancement. But there was a lot of capital expended, nearly 10% of their balance sheet, to build that. But they did a phenomenal job on it. I visited recently. They did a terrific job. So, I mean, you do get these cases where, you know, certain of the REIT managers have very strong development credentials. The ones that haven't may have to put in place teams of specialists to actually undertake this on behalf of the unit holders. And I'm not sure where the supervision of that's going to come from.
Is there a difference between redevelopment or enhancement compared to actual developmental projects? Because there is a saying in investments that if you want more returns, you got to take higher risk, right? And I'm not sure that REITs investors having invested in their vehicles for income would want to take that extra risk. And in the short term, precious capital will be tied up in place of dividends. Azman?
Yeah, if I can say a few words there. In fact, I echo the word risk, which Datuk actually used just now. Basically, now we are looking at REIT moving over to development. Now, this is a big challenge.
It's not only a big challenge, but in my view, is very contentious because if you ask bond managers to allow them to go into equity, a portion of 10-15%, it's a major restructuring of that vehicle.
It's true. And what we're looking at now is that there is a risk of gestation period, for instance, for the development. Now, if you're looking at 15%, if you look at a fund of about $7 billion, you'll be looking at about how much, you know, about $700 million worth of land to be acquired. That's a huge amount which you're going to park on the balance sheet. Now, basically, that will be funded by your internal funding. Basically, you can't do much else but to do that. But of course, the fantastic thing is that this is where understand.
If you look at 10-15% of the NAV, the REITs now are providing dividend yields of 6-7%. This 10-15% allocated to development would deprive the REIT holders of their dividends.
Yes, the distribution per unit will be affected, definitely. You know, and this is where, how do we actually look at income support? I think Dato actually mentioned that before you go into it, you have to secure tenants. You must have people who are willing to pay upfront. And you have a triple net lease. That means, you know, you don't look at any other expenses. But this is a too ideal situation we are looking at. And probably for the bigger REITs, which have got a construction arm and also perhaps more established track records, it will be good. But it also opens the smaller REITs, which are probably going to experiment it, you know, and basically to the detriment of the shareholders. So we need some kind of, I would say, watchdog or monitoring. And the SC is the best people to actually look into this in this consultation paper now.
Okay, there are certain caveats, protections that are being put in place right now in the sense that the shareholders have got to approve everything. You've got to put it to the vote as well. But to just take the accountability and the governance even further, is there another way of doing it? For example, offering a direct vehicle like a SPAC to these REIT investors and giving them the option of whether they want to invest in that special purpose vehicle for development while at the same time holding their REITs. Is that a viable proposition?
That's a very dangerous one. They tried it before the crash. They had a lot of staple securities out of Australia where they had a development company married to the REIT. All the development companies tore the REIT down to pieces when they started losing money and it affected. So I think the REIT should remain a pure vehicle. But it's important that it be allowed a certain percentage of their assets to be used for redevelopment or leveraged up for redevelopment. Sometimes you may own a property that you might have bought that's getting very old, that you probably think, you know, the plot ratio in the area has gone up considerably. You can build something far more attractive, and at the same time, when it's completed, have the economics that make sense. So those are the kind of opportunities that REITs need to do. You can't be holding old properties on your balance sheet forever. It actually to the detriment of all your unit holders, because old properties lose value, lose tenants. And you talked earlier about enhancements, the asset enhancement initiatives, the AEIs. Very important part of REITs, where you have to constantly keep your buildings refurbished. Otherwise, your tenants lose interest. You've got to keep adding new features. You've got to keep adding new finishes, new lifts if you need to. All the time, they need to be upgraded. And this gives them a huge advantage in the leasing market because over traditional owners of properties who really are not interested in reinvesting in their assets, REITs actually have a culture of keeping their assets in really pristine condition. And all these moves, I think, are to enable REITs to have more flexibility in deploying their capital, to make decisions on extending properties if they have spare land, capitalizing on those enhancement issues. I mean, if you extend it, it's considered development. If you don't, it's internal. So, I mean, the Securities Commission is trying to put a lot more decision-making of these asset enhancements with the REIT manager themselves. And I think they've viewed the REITs over the last 10 years. And quite honestly, I've known them personally. They're very, very responsible managers. They don't take risk, you know, lightly. They're very concerned about their returns to unit holders. And I think moving forward, such things will actually add spectacularly to their returns.
This morning, we have Dato' Stuart LeBroy, Executive Chairman of Area Management, which is a real estate-focused private equity firm, and Azman Arifin, the Chief Real Estate Consultant for Xstrata Solutions, which is a real estate consultancy. We're talking about SC's proposed changes to real estate investment trusts in the Malaysian market. Up next, we'll talk about other proposals within SC's proposals. It's The Breakfast Grill, and we're with Dato' Stuart LeBroy, Executive Chairman of Area Management, a real estate-focused private equity firm, as well as Azman Arifin, Chief Real Estate Consultant with Xstrata Solutions, which is a real estate consultancy. And we're talking about SC's proposed changes to the structure of REITs. Now, the other proposal put forward by SC, and I suppose by the MRMA as well, you had a lot to do to driving these proposals, is to allow REITs to acquire vacant land for the purposes of developing new properties. And we now come back to this idea of dividend losses in the short term, don't we, Dato?
Any project that you do where you need to expend capital will have a negative carry for a while. I think the savvy investor can see that, you know, if you're going to invest, say, $200 million in a development, upon completion and stabilization, that could carry a valuation of $300 to $400 million. So immediately what happens is that they have a huge capture of gain on their books. The yields actually pump up quite strongly, and the share price starts to move up. So you have what's called a short-term pain for a long-term gain. It's how the cycle of investment goes, and it's a natural progression. If you keep buying in the market, REITs are finding it more and more difficult to find accretive deals. So they keep buying, but the margin that they are getting them at are fairly narrow. So it doesn't really move the needle very much. So you've seen that share prices have gone fairly flat. Mm-hmm. Acquisitions have gone very flat over the last two or three years. Only a few of the main big REITs have actually been actively in the acquisition market. Mm-hmm. And you've seen that they're the ones that actually have done the best.
Azman, you are also very experienced in managing some retail REITs when you were with Hector. What is the magnitude of that jump up after, let's say, acquiring the vacant land? Do you have any empirical evidence on that?
Well, in fact, when we're looking at vacant land, at this point in time, not many REITs have actually acquired vacant land. Now, Sunway actually acquired from their parent company, and it's actually adjoining their building. So basically, that would add value mm-hmm. to the building itself. So, you know, the way SC looks at it, basically, it's just an extension of their own building. And when we look at the actual intention now, where SC is proposing that REITs are allowed to acquire greenfields, this is where we are looking at a different ballgame altogether. Now, basically, greenfields, yes, if you actually look at what some REITs are doing, they have already, in fact, looked at hypermarket retailers, for instance, where they actually work with developers or investors who come in to actually build the building first, secure the tenant, and get a certain yield ready, and for the REIT to acquire that ready building. I think, Julian, you mentioned just now about having an SPV or a third party to work mm-hmm. on this before. Yeah. And I've seen where sponsors also, on the in the background, are basically nurturing buildings so that it can be injected into a REIT. You know, this is the means of what we call exit strategy for some sponsors. Okay, I float it out. But again, probably a lot of people are not probably too aware that basically sponsors sometimes they actually retain certain shareholding in the company.
My suggestion of an SPV is basically to separate the risk, the REITs being safe, and then the SPV is where, you know, people can go kill themselves with the risk if they wanted to take those kind of risks, right? And the REIT holder themselves can do that diversification themselves to see how much risk they want to take. But just going back to this idea of acquiring vacant land and expecting that step up in dividends a few years later. So the average dividends right now, 6% for REITs in Malaysia. What we're saying is that in the first 2 years, you have a big whack to your dividends, let's say going down to 4%. Would these dividends subsequently go back up to 8, 10%?
I think you have to look at the scale of what you're investing. We're all assuming that everyone's going to bang in 15% of their bottom line into development. What development? Speculative development we do not go into normally. I think that's probably a very dangerous path.
How do you safeguard that? How do you create
pre-commits?
How does SC, the regulator, are they going to safeguard that REITs don't go into irresponsible development?
Well, I think if you really want to do a development, I think I assume that SC will have some oversight on the development projects. So I think the REITs have to justify either to their unit holders or to the regulator themselves that this is a pre-commit to build out a property that will be fully tenanted at the end of it and give the following yields. And then you do the economics with your balance sheet. You do the whole fund model and show where the change is coming. Because when you actually fund yourself through debt, REITs debt is much lower than their dividends. So you do have some advantage of actually borrowing to build, and then, or you can get equity to build if you want. But at the end of the day, when you do a pre-commit and you actually build it out, your returns can be the double digits. You're not buying assets at 6%, you're buying them at 12%. And when you pool those back into the main portfolio, what you end up with is a much better valuation and a much better return. So these are what I call the turbocharged returns. The other thing that a lot of people don't talk about is the rotating of assets. You know, I think REITs should also consider selling assets as well.
Mm-hmm. Which happens in a bond fund, right? They have different maturities.
No, you rotate your assets. Yeah. Assets are getting old and flattened out, so it's time to get rid of them and do something new. They can actually do that strategy by taking the funds and reinvesting in a new development that will give them much better returns.
Mm-hmm. Or they can buy into a new...
Or they can buy stabilized assets. Whichever it is, it gives them that flexibility. But the development side does give what I call a turbocharged return to the REIT that has been lacking as a catalyst in the market. And don't forget, we're always taking the view that the REIT managers don't know what they're doing. They do. Mm-hmm. Just remember that. They're experienced.
We just want to be protected from the bad
and
ones.
They really have... Knowing them personally, they have the unit holders' interest at heart at all times.
On the Breakfast Grill today are Azman Arifin, Chief Real Estate Consultant with Xstrata Solutions, as well as Dr. Dato' Stuart LeBroy, Executive Chairman of Area Management. And we have a question from a listener, from Victor. With shopping trends changing, are retail REITs, or I would add REITs in general, safe investments? And this is very interesting because it also ties into one of SC's interesting proposal, which is that you guys want to do yearly revaluation of the REITs. Should investors consider, apart from dividends, capital gains or capital losses when investing in REITs?
Maybe I can have a look at some of these points for you. When we look at the revaluation, there's always this issue of basically whether or not the rental income is picking up fast enough, you know, and whether or not your yield will be affected by the revaluation in terms of the perception of the investor.
I thought the revaluation is not yield dependent, but just based on what market prices of your assets are.
No, it's yield dependent.
It's yield dependent?
And
yes.
It's a very bipolar market.
Yeah.
You'll find that some properties, I'll give you an example. When I was in Axis, flagship building, Menara Axis, was given a valuation of $550 a square foot. Across the road, they were marketing a new development at $1,000. You explain that to me. I mean, we were giving a yield of 7%, 6% to the market. If you bought that asset, it'd give you 3%. So when they come to actually doing the valuations for REITs, the valuers go through a very strict regime, mark me if I'm wrong, of actually looking at the cash flow.
Yes, we have to.
The cash flow is down, the valuation goes down. So it's a wonderful mechanism. So if we're going to be impacted with income, your valuation will suffer.
So if it is yield dependent, would you then decide at a certain yield level and then price your value your asset? Is that how it works?
Well, basically, you would have to look at what are the yields which are yielding in other comparable funds, for instance, and also at the same time, certain properties, like when you're looking at retail properties, you would have all the comparables showing what are the transactions going at.
So if interest rates go up, for example, and yields would have to follow suit, your property value would fall. Am I reading this right?
It depends. No, we are looking at the yields at this point in time. So basically, when you are actually pitching the rental income, the revenue, the net revenue against the valuation, this is where you start looking at what would be what we call the value of the property. Now, what we are concerned about is that, of course, every year you can do the revaluation. I have been involved in quarterly valuations as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and we can see the trend going up. But when you have shopping malls, which have, we are talking about retail, pure play retail now, when we look at shopping malls which are actually packed, having tenants who are actually packed to a lot of turnover rent, when the market is down, consumer spending is down, you would see an impact. And that is where sometimes when you look at the revaluation, suddenly, for that year, your income has dropped.
I guess this is a good time to ask about the sector. We see a lot of empty malls. And we also saw recently that Tabung Haji, for one of the buildings, offered a rental that was sharply way below market prices. What are the prospects for the property sector, especially the REIT sector?
Well, I think you have to look at the REITs in its various sectors. There's the mall sector, which has done extremely well. I think they're currently offering the lowest yields and the highest share price. They've done the best run-up on pricing this year that I've seen. They're considered a safe asset. And look at the yields and the valuations of these malls. They are basically what we call the golden malls, the pavilions, the mid-valleys, the Sunway Pyramids, irreplaceable assets. Those tend to do well. It's the smaller malls that are going to have a problem. So you're going to see there's going to be a bit of a divide between the big ones and the smaller ones. I think what's going to impact the entire mall market is going to be e-commerce, which people don't realize it, but some of them are growing at 100% a year. The volumes are actually skyrocketing, and shift in tastes are moving towards home, online buying. I mean, Malaysia has 100% penetration on mobile phones. I've always said the mobile phone is a new weapon of mass destruction, and it's such a disruptive technology. We've seen so many businesses disappear, if you think about it, over time.
And Azman, so what about the rest of the property sector? We hear a lot of these headline news about oversupply, how much, tens of millions of square feet of office space coming out in the market and empty malls, tenants going away. Will this have a kind of domino effect into existing REITs?
When we look at the impact of income, impact on income when you have a low or lower occupancy rate, of course, you'll see a lot less cash flow. Now, this is where the managers will have to play a very active role. And this is where sometimes you will actually look at a lot of other initiatives. You know, sometimes some of these malls have got very strong A&P team. They can increase the occupancy. But again, now competition is quite strong between the malls. Everybody is trying to draw shoppers to their malls, and now we're coming up to the last quarter of the year, and this is where everybody will be fighting for every single cent. Now, what we're concerned about now is basically how some of these malls are actually being built in locations where instead of complementing, they are competing. So I think this is a challenge for us in this market. But what would be concerned, I think I echo Datuk's comments just now, that malls tend to be quite good REIT funds for people to invest in. But again, when you look at malls, there's always this this risk of income changes over time. But what would be good is that basically you have a lot of opportunities to improve the income.
This morning, we have Azman Arifin, Chief Real Estate Consultant with Xstrata Solutions, a real estate consultancy, as well as Dato' Stuart LeBroy, Executive Chairman of Area Management, which is a real estate-focused private equity firm. We're talking about changes to REITs regulation, and this is going to be an extended grill because there's so much to talk about. Up next, we'll look at the experience of other countries in REIT regulation. Today we have Dato' Stuart LeBroy, who is Executive Chairman of Area Management, and Azman Arifin, Chief Real Estate Consultant with Xstrata Solutions. And we're talking about REIT regulation as he has proposed some changes. And we've talked a lot about the local situation. Let's move into other countries. In Singapore, They have rules that look like they are more aggressive than what is being proposed here in Malaysia. For example, a 25% development limit, right, proposed in Singapore, and up to 60% gearing borrowings for REITs. Azman, I think you have some experience in Singapore. How have these developments panned out for the REITs?
When you look at the situation in Singapore, Julian, Datuk, you would see that Singapore itself is quite a restrictive market as it is. You have very limited land supply. Everything seems to be under control. So when the REITs in Singapore need to expand, for instance, now, lately, it's very difficult for them to look at their current assets, and what they are looking at is basically big acquisitions. They're going to pump up and they're going to acquire. And you'll see some exchanges between the funds, you know, disposing. Like what Datuk was saying just now, what could happen is basically some of the older properties can be disposed, or, you know, after that you pump in to buy new properties or build new properties.
Mm-hmm. Now, so the Singapore amendments came into effect in the beginning of this year, January 2016. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the proposed amendments would be implemented in stages. But have we seen a change in how REITs performed after the implementation of those proposals?
I think it's still early. It's still early in the year. But what we've seen is that basically a lot of the REITs in Singapore now have pumped up. You know, people like Mapletree, Frasers Centre Point, and also Capital Mall, they've started to pump up their gearing to actually go towards acquisition now. So with this, perhaps then, you know, the market capitalization will grow. And what will happen, in fact, is basically you'll see movement in values. Some of the properties will be going up. Now, what I see as an impact is basically some of these REITs are already in Malaysia. And they are doing JVs with Malaysian REITs or Malaysian companies. And I see them having a lot more attention in Malaysia now. Mm-hmm. So this is an expansion anyway. So what we'll see is that now, because capital funding in Singapore is relatively lower than in Malaysia, so we'll see them probably also expanding in Malaysia a lot more.
Actually, Singapore actually brought down the borrowing limits. It was 60% for REITs with credit ratings, and now they've just standardized it at 45%. Is this a signal that the Singapore authorities or regulators are kind of leery of too much borrowing within a REIT?
Well, I like the, Sam Zell, the great investor from the US, that is saying that leverage is my favorite beverage. He used to like 80% leverage balance sheet.
If you can take the roller coaster ride.
Right? Oh, it is. It's a roller coaster ride. It's dangerous. And if you really are a REIT that lives on high leverage, you're really finding it difficult to bring it down, because the moment you do that, your dividends start to get thrashed. So you have to keep it there all the time. It's very hard to grow when you're at the limit of your borrowings. You can't borrow to buy. Mm-hmm. You have to go through placements or, you know, go through other sort of securitized vehicles like perpetuals or things like that. But, you know, having said that, I think the changes the MAS brought into the REIT market was a response to a lot of consultation. I think they're very positive. I think the Securities Commission has sort of looked at what Singapore has done and actually taken the best points, and in fact, we've improved on it. Don't forget, in Singapore, only 10% is still earmarked for development. We are at 15. So that one up for Malaysia boleh. Okay, we're being a little bit more aggressive than the Singaporeans. I think largely from the fact, I think the SC recognizes that there's a limited stock of grade A assets that can be put into REITs to create what I call a really vibrant and big market. We're only 40 billion. Singapore is like about four times our size or five times our size. And it's going to take a challenge to get up there because the assets are so much more valuable. So I think the changes that we brought are timely, but Singapore has pioneered the big changes, and I think we've looked at them carefully, and I think we've adopted the best of them. The hard stop 50% is been there all the time.
Yes, exactly. I want to talk about that, because before this, you can seek shareholders' approval to go beyond 50% borrowing of your assets, and now, as you mentioned, there's a hard stop. What is the thinking behind this seeming reduction of riskiness of the moves?
Well, if you look at all the REITs, by and large, most of them are in the 30% range. They've kept their, only a couple of REITs are flirting at the 50% range. The problem there is that, you know, there's no, and one thing that the Securities Commission has to address, if, for instance, there's a downside on valuations, they're going to cross that 50% mark, okay? And what happens then? Are they forced to do what I call a fire sale of assets to bring it back? Or option to go to the market to raise equity and dilute the unit holders' interests. These are the two options on the table. They can't go and have an extension to go beyond 50. I think 50 is probably as far as you really want the low-risk vehicle like a REIT to be. Quite honestly, I think 30% is a comfortable limit. Because at 30%, you can really see the asset performance. At 50, it's very hard to see the true asset performance. It's masked by the arbitrage on the leverage that you put on the model.
There's also a feeling that this really introduces a lot of intervention by regulators into investors' decisions, because you can classify very tidily the various asset classes and let investors make their own decision. But now it looks like we're in a situation where trying to fine-tune what a REIT is and what it's not. So perhaps we can go back to the idea of and the spirit of why an investment vehicle like REITs exists. What is the point of investing in a REIT, Azman?
If you look at REITs, it gives you the opportunity to go to allow the public or the unit holders to own small pieces of big investments. Okay, this is where the penetration is better for these investors. And by the looks of it also now, due to the good management of the REITs, you can see quite stable performance in terms of dividend yields and also the distribution per unit. Now, when we look at the opportunities that we have in REIT, of course, this is going to be probably one of the best vehicles for also a foreign investment, you know, because some of the attention now is coming from foreign investors. Now, this worries me as well, because the foreign investors have got bigger capacities, you know, bigger appetites. And basically, when they come in, they look at a lot of opportunities. And I've worked with some of these foreign players before, and they are actually quite competitive, you know. Now, in Malaysia, of course, a lot of unit holders do not know that basically some of these REITs are actually paying out dividends quite a few times a year. You don't wait for the whole year to get your dividend. So basically, it will be, you know, more or less prorated throughout the year, mm-hmm. depending on performance. So this is where the opportunity, sometimes people feel that, you know, I can get payment maybe twice or four times a year, quarterly as well.
Is that purely the point for REIT investment, income supplementation, or is that more to it?
It's a dividend stock, pure and simple, but you have a very good backstop on your capital, on what it's invested in. REITs are 100% invested in assets. So you really have no other equities or things inside there. If you look at the portfolio of all the REITs, they're entirely invested in fixed real estate. Now, if you want to buy real estate on the long term, you don't try and buy a condominium, okay? Because those kind of yields are very difficult. You have to manage it. You have tenants that leave.
You've got to fix the pipes.
And you got to fix the pipes, and you just go crazy trying to do that. You'd rather put your money into a pavilion. I mean, where on earth can you buy a 5-star shopping mall and have an opportunity to own a bit of it? So with that, you keep accumulating your stocks over time instead of putting in a fixed deposit. Don't forget, I always say, when you put money in a fixed deposit, you put a dollar in year one and you get a dollar out in year five. But that dollar is probably worth 50 cents. Your real estate value has gone up double maybe in that time. So you're actually getting capital gain plus a dividend. Your total returns on REITs on average globally has been 15% a year.
So just as some concluding remarks, this seeming identity crisis right now, a REIT's going to development, plus this idea of income supplementation through dividends. How do you reconcile that?
I think by allowing the REITs to go into development, they're giving unit holders an opportunity to get better returns in the long term and really participate in a more dynamic investment vehicle. The managers themselves, I know personally, and I know them that they're being very responsible and they will do the best thing for the unit holders. So I think giving them a chance to develop assets and giving much better returns is a very positive move by the Securities Commission. I fully support it, and I think the members of the association are right behind that. And they will be responsible. They will not be responsible. If they're irresponsible, guess what's going to happen to their share price? It's going to be dumped and it's going to fail. So I think they're very conscious of that fact, that they'll make sure that their share price really is preserved over the long term.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this morning. There's so much to talk about, but that's all the time we have. And if you have any comments about SC's proposals, do forward them to the Securities Commission. You have up to 13th of September to do that. And I'd like to thank our guest today, Azman Arifin, Chief Real Estate Consultant from Xstrata Solutions, as well as Dato' Stuart Lebroy, Executive Chairman of Area Management. I'm Julian Ng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.